Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to do our entire health and nutrition segment on one topic, but one that's very important and could save a lot of people's lives who are listening: the dangers of arterial disease. I'm going to go into it in some depth and give you both the problem and the solution. I suggest that you take some notes. Then we're going to finish that and go to a special interview. And it's special because this is quite simply one of the most brilliant minds on the planet. And he's going to be speaking by Skype from Great Britain, Professor Rupert Sheldrake. If you don't know who Professor Sheldrake is, well, here are some of his accomplishments. He's a British biochemist and plant physiologist. He has done a lot of innovative field theories in plants and animals, including humans, to see how all this ties together to a deeper structures of biological development and collective consciousness. He is a fellow, which is the highest achievement you can get at Cambridge University. He is a Frank Knox Fellow at Harvard University. He's a research fellow at the British Royal Society. And by the way, to become a fellow at the British Royal Society, you have to be at the top of that heap. That's like being the top person at the National Academy of Sciences. He's published dozens and dozens of research papers in peer-reviewed journals, and he is a very spiritual person, spending 2 years in a Benedictine Christian ashram in South India. So we're going to talk to him about how is such a person been cast as a pseudoscientific fraud by illiterate editors at Wikipedia. But that's the case, and everything he's done to correct it has been impossible. He then asked to be removed, and they said, "It's not your call, it's ours." Now think of that for a moment. Nowhere else in jurisprudence do you have a group of people who are anonymous decide they want to attack you. Their whole purpose is to discredit you, destroy your life, destroy your reputation. No consequence to them and terrible consequence to you. And yet you can't ask them to take you off. You could ask, they're not going to do it. So it's their intent to pillar people. So they become your judge, jury, and executioner of your character. That is allowed at this moment. That's why I'm asking people, walk away from Wikipedia. I've written 74 articles. The last was presented yesterday. If you didn't read that article, I suggest you go up online to prn.fm and download it so that you'll know what Wikipedia really is, you know, what it's about, who's behind it. And we have been deconstructing this for some time. I have an article up there entitled Wikipedia's Culture of Editorial Sadism, Richard Gale and myself. And we go through it step by step. We're going to be suing Wikipedia editors, and we are making a major effort to show that there's no legitimacy in our opinion to Wikipedia. And our opinion is a fraudulent encyclopedia. So he's going to be here to tell his story. He's one of many who will be coming forward to tell their stories about being vilified on Wikipedia. But we're fighting back. And then we're finishing our show today with something that people have said they really enjoy, and that is positive, uplifting insights into the human condition. We're all faced with various crises. Some are more, let's say, some prevail more upon the sensitivities of a person's life than others. If you've lost your job, if you can't feed your family, if you're about to become homeless, if you're going to be thrown out of your apartment because of non-payment of rent, if you're suffering from disease, on top of all that, yeah, yours is a serious situation. All the more reason why you'll want to hear this self-empowerment discussion later on. We begin, however, with the latest on health and healing. In that respect, I want to talk about what I see as a hyper pandemic, a real one, not the COVID virus. The virus is not fraudulent. The virus can kill susceptible people with comorbidities. but everything else you've heard about the virus is wrong. In any case, what you really have worldwide is you have arterial plaque accumulation. It's called atherosclerosis, and it is a serious problem for all humans. And what happens is you accumulate plaque inside your coronary, carotid, and other arteries. And that immediately increases your risk of cardiovascular events because of the arterial plaques. There's generally no symptoms until it triggers a stroke or a heart attack. Now, there's things that will help, and I'm going to get to that, but I want to go through how do you end up getting this to happen. It just doesn't happen overnight. Here are your risk factors. If you don't have enough vitamin K, now that's easy and simple to remedy. Vitamin K is not expensive, and it's generally anywhere from 1 to 3 milligrams. That's a small amount. So there's no excuse for you not to have your vitamin K, but it can protect your arteries. If you have too much estrogen, now what gives you too much estrogen? Three things. A meat-based diet that really pumps up the estrogen. Being stressed. Most people today are hyper-stressed. And then being overweight. And the vast majority of Americans, two-thirds of all adults, are overweight. That increases your estrogen level. That increases your risk for arterial damage and heart attacks and strokes. Another is you've got too high of fibrinogen, F-I-B-R-I-N-O-G-E-N, and too high of triglycerides. Now, when these two markers are high, you end up with a higher degree of and risk of heart attack and stroke. Again, it's silent. Now, it's easy to take a blood chemistry test, inexpensive. Take a vial of blood, and they can check all of your lipids, and they can check C-reactive protein. That's also one of your indicators. If you have a high C-reactive protein and a high homocysteine, both of those will contribute to a heart attack. Also, if you have high blood pressure, which millions of Americans, tens of millions of Americans have, high blood pressure. If you have too high cholesterol, if you're deficient in vitamin D, if you're deficient in nitric oxide, one of the things I suggest is having beet juice, pomegranates, because beets and pomegranates are very rich sources of nitric oxide, which relax and expand the blood vessels, help heal the arteries, the internal side of the artery called the epithelium, and help lower your risk of a heart attack. Also, your risk if you have a high fasting glucose level. When you wake up in the morning, you shouldn't have a blood glucose over 100. Most people do. In fact, it can go very high. That puts you at risk of a heart attack, and you don't need that. Too much insulin also is one of the indicators. If you have a low EPA DHA level, you're not getting your essential fatty acids. That can also cause this. And those, the LDL cholesterol, that's your bad cholesterol if that's increased. Now, those are your primary but not your only indicators for how you can hurt yourself. So what can you do to reverse all of those that I just mentioned? It's not difficult. We do it all the time. In fact, almost every single person who came in to two separate anti-aging groups we did, one was the original group, the second was confirmatory, we were able to show all of these were reduced just with a plant-based diet, a healthy plant-based diet, where you have lots of whole grains and nuts and seeds and legumes, pulses like split peas and lima beans are very good, navy beans, adduki beans, black-eyed peas. These are all good, and you should have more of them. We don't eat enough beans in our society. Get rid of all meat. Get rid of all dairy. Get rid of all deep-fried foods, because those create dangerous, what are called heterocyclic amines, which are chemicals that occur in meat when you cook it, and acrylamides, which are in let's say, carbohydrates like a muffin, toast, a bagel, potato chips, French fries, when you brown them, those are deadly. So you want to get rid of those. Get them out of the diet completely. Have none of them. So get rid of coffee and soft drinks. Get rid of your energy drinks because they're rich in caffeine. You don't want the caffeine. It can be deadly, and it can exhaust and deplete the adrenal glands. So that's the first step. The second step is to flood the body with healthy chlorophyll. And that's where you get your chlorophyll from your green juices. So have your green juices, get your chlorophyll. The best drink in the morning is green apple, lemon. You can throw in some ginger, celery, cucumber. Terrific for you. You can make them all on one day a week and then have them go from the freezer to the refrigerator so the next day you get up and they're there. They're, you know, you're ready to have your health drink starting the day. Now, we've done this. We know what juices do. They can rebalance a toxic chemistry to a healthy chemistry. It's not difficult. So we've got to get out of this whole idea and start getting healthy juices into our system. It's essential that you do this. All right? Healthy juices in, colas, milk, and other carbonated beverages out. And then have healthy nuts or nut butters. Walnut, that would be the top. But pine nut is good. Cashew is terrific. And also pistachio. These are all good. Not deep fried and roasted and salted. Raw. So a scoop of walnut butter put into your blender in the morning or into a hot cereal, that is terrific. Then make sure you're having good fats from coconut oil, flaxseed oil, hemp seed oil, olive oil. Those are your best. And also one other I would add would be your pine. Grapeseed extract is even better. I'll say that. So those are the things that you got to do. Now, there's some nutrients you can take also which can help. And especially for the arteries, I would take anything that has good nitric oxide. If you had yourself a glass of beet juice each day, that would be terrific. Then I would take the French maritime pine bark. That's very powerful. And there's a supporting plant extract called Centella asiatica. C-E-N-T-E-L-L-A. That's C-E-N-T-E-L-L-A. And also A-S-I-A-T-I-C-A. And that's important too. It makes your plaques, or I should say it makes the whole epithelium less likely to have a plaque rupture, and that rupturing plaque can cause a fatal cardiovascular event. And there's lots of good studies on when you're using these, you can reduce your plaque progression by as much as 95%. And people need to know that, and people need to do it. I would also add in there, let's see, I would put in maybe 200 milligrams of pycnogenol. That would be very good. I would put in 800 units of a good natural mixed tocotrienols, and well, you get about 200 units of tocotrienols, but tocopherols mixed, probably 800 units, 400 in the morning, 400 in the afternoon. You want your proanthocyanins. You want your phenolic acids because that helps slow the progression of arterial plaques. Vitamin C is very important as well. Using that every day. So vitamin C, vitamin E, magnesium, that also helps. Simple things, not difficult. And of course, the more berries you eat, the better it's going to be for you as well. So you want your berries. You do not want thick, unstable arteries. Also, go to cola, one of the most popular herbs in the world, mainly from Asia. It's an aquatic plant, contains compounds called triterpenoids, and they stabilize soft plaque by improving the synthesis of collagen. And collagen is a component of the thick caps that hold soft plaque in place. So I would definitely have Gotukola, G-O-T-U-K-O-L-A. So those are just some of the things. That's not all the things. Coenzyme Q10 will also be very important as well. So want to help prevent a heart attack, prevent a stroke, prevent atherosclerosis? I just gave you that remedy just now. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going directly to Skype and hearing. Hopefully we'll be able to hear him. Sometimes we have a good connection, sometimes not. Well, quite simply, one of the most brilliant men on the planet, and he is now being vilified, his reputation destroyed on Wikipedia. Hearing a story like this firsthand changes nothing when you write Wikipedia and tell him that you've read Gary Knoll's 74 articles and read the letters to the board, and you're walking away from Wikipedia and you're going to tell everyone else you know to do the same thing. For cause, for good reason, that might get some of their attentions. I'm Gary Knoll. We're now going by Skype over to Great Britain to interview Dr. Rupert Sheldrake. Dr. Sheldrake is a British biochemist and a plant physiologist who has experimented with innovative field theories in plants and animals, including humans, to account for the causative formation of a deeper structure of biological development in the collective consciousness. Dr. Sheldrake has been a fellow at Cambridge University, a Frank Knox Fellow at Harvard University, and a research fellow of the British Royal Society. His research has included efforts to reach a greater understanding of memory, perception, cognition, and the debate over consciousness. For 2 years, he lived in a Benedictine Christian ashram in South India under the guidance of the late great sage Father Griffiths, who was also very close with Andrew Harvey, who has frequently been on this program. Over the past several decades, Rupert developed his theory of morphic resonance and morphogenic fields. He's written extensively on morphogenic theory since the publication of A New Science of Life back in 1981. His most recent book is Ways to Go Beyond and Why They Work, which presents various spiritual practices and ways that for everyday activities to have spiritual meaning for the scientific age we are now entering. His website is sheldrake.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Good to be back with you, Gary.
Many of us who advocate alternative medical theories and therapies acknowledge parapsychological phenomena or have researched and developed theories of the phenomena that do not conform to a strict materialistic, reductionistic, linear, Newtonian view of reality, such as your own theory of morphic resonance, and that has been lambasted on Wikipedia and by modern-day skeptics over the years. We are portraying, or let's say all of us in the field, are portrayed as either delusional, as con artists, or as advocates of pseudoscience and quackery. Now, mind you, we're not talking about a few people. We're talking about millions of therapists, all the thousands, hundreds of thousands that practice Ayurvedic medicine, all those that practice traditional Chinese medicine, those who graduate from highly respected schools with MD, PhDs, people who have published multiple articles in peer-reviewed literature whose work is accepted. And in spite of all that, plus all the clinicians in the United States who are using alternative therapies, all of them, one brush, you're all nuts, you're all crazy, you're all delusional. So says the skeptics, all of whom are anonymous, none of whom have a background in the field, none have interviewed people that I'm aware of in the field that they're criticizing, nor have they looked at the actual clinical experiences of hundreds of millions of patients' visits every year, like for chiropractors. And so here we have this phenomena. An organization pretending to be a legitimate encyclopedia like Britannica, which is legitimate, where we know the authors, we know the curricula vitae, they are an expert in the field that they're editing. And then we have Wikipedia, where you could have someone who has no education, no background whatsoever, and suddenly they can destroy a legitimate person's reputation, as they have. Yourself, Deepak Chopra, myself, and others. And yet, they're protected. Up to this point, at least, you cannot sue the Wikipedia Foundation. You can sue individual editors, and that's what we're about to do. But now think of this. I've interviewed thousands of physicians, most board certified, who saw that there was a limitation in their traditional approach. Therefore, they went back into education on their own time and dime, and they learned additional ways of healing that they found actually worked. Dr. Dean Ornish, the great cardiologist, is but one example. Instead of being respected for opening new doors, breaking through old paradigms, they're condemned for that. In which case, then, if you're a regular doctor, a regular scientist, and you produce nothing new, you're appreciated and respected. If you break things in the way of old systems of belief, you're condemned for it. Wikipedia is the judge, jury, and executioner for the Orthodox community. They are the attack dogs at the gates between the Orthodox and the failed systems or partially beneficial systems and what could be a whole new age of enlightenment. The media is on their side. The government has been on their side. Major corporations on their side. And we only have our own experiences on our side. The forum is yours. Take us through what your experience has been and the impossibility of having anything changed by following their rules.
Well, thanks for that summary, Gary. The situation is indeed quite dire. The problem with Wikipedia is that it's in these areas that we're concerned with. These people who've taken over chunks of Wikipedia to edit them in favor of their own viewpoint, they're part of this community of ideological skeptics. Not genuine skeptics in the sense of open-minded inquiry. They're usually dogmatic believers in a materialist worldview. And their worldview is that the mind's nothing but the brain. The universe is made out of matter. The only things that can work in medicine are physical or chemical things, surgery or drugs. And there's no explanation for consciousness. Now, this is ideological worldview, the paradigm of materialism. And that's where these are coming from. As far as they're concerned, any evidence for anything that doesn't fit in with their worldview must be fraudulent. So all these millions of alternative and complementary and traditional medical practitioners must be facts or frauds. People like me who do research in conventional areas of science must be fraudulent. And so they attack. On these, they've formed a way of working together in groups, attacking subjects and people who don't fit in with their worldview on Wikipedia in a way that's extremely unfair, has no respect for the truth. When they started attacking my page about 2013, they demolished what was a reasonably fair account of my work almost overnight. They removed all my academic qualifications. My PhD was removed. The fact that I taught at Cambridge University was removed because they assumed that these were fraudulent claims. And there were a few editors, fair-minded editors, managed to get back these obvious things. Since then, what they've done is systematically collected negative opinions about my work, almost all of them drawn from members of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, which is a militant activist group to promote this extreme materialist ideology. They quote these people, and these are the principal sources which they put on my own and other people's websites. So they put only negative comments. They don't put anything positive. allege, for example, that I haven't published any papers in scientific journals for years. In fact, I published dozens of papers, and then when one of the editors who worked on my page pointed this out, they said, well, if these journals publish Sheldrake's papers, they must be pseudo-journals. Dozens of papers in peer-reviewed papers just wiped out because some ignorant individual thinks anything to do with me must be bad. Any journal that published my work isn't worth considering. Even these are some of the most prestigious journals in subjects like psychology. So it's very difficult to argue with them. Editors who try arguing with them, quite a number have tried to get a fair representation of my life and work on my biography webpage. Those who've argued with them upvoted their sort of things they put on are deleted almost immediately. And then if they persist, then they get them banned from editing it in Wikipedia. Several people have been banned for life from Wikipedia because they've tried to make things fairer and more truthful on my website and on other people's. So these are endemic problems. I'm very glad that you and Richard Gale are taking this fight up, because it's very, very important that people are made aware of the distortion and, if possible, something's done about the way Wikipedia is run.
Let's take this also a little deeper for people who may not understand the power of Wikipedia to prevent people from trying anything in the alternative field, even though what is posted in the actual peer-reviewed scientific literature and presented on PubMed in the Library of Medicine are hundreds of thousands of documents, studies, and yet they act as if none of this exists. And yet all that is human experience and something we should be benefiting from. And they have nothing on their side. They cannot show by their collective efforts that they improve the quality of people's lives or save lives. And they're denigrating billions of people's life experience from different countries using some form of alternative therapy. So no one challenges them, and they know they can't be challenged, so they don't care for the truth. How would you explain this phenomenon, the fact that the New York Times, Time Magazine, 60 Minutes, no one has exposed the fraud that occurs and the gross bias and the animus and the hatred that they have? They're acting more like a savage cult than a reasoned encyclopedia. Your thoughts, please.
Well, I find that when I talk to people about this, most people just don't believe that it's possible. They can't believe it as bad as it really is. And they just find it to be, they think, most people naively think Wikipedia is a public-spirited, altruistic organization that's a really good idea, and democratic and so forth. But in fact, the ideals behind it are good ideas. The problem is it's been hopelessly corrupted by special interest groups. It's not just in the areas that you and I are concerned with. Almost any area disputed, political areas too, have biased editing. Wherever people can capture Wikipedia in their own interests, they do. Where they're motivated to do that, they get groups of editors who work with them. So I think it's high time that the New York Times and other responsible media operations actually did an inquiry into this. In fact, it was great if someone did a documentary looking into these skeptic activist groups. It's not just the skeptics on Wikipedia. The ones who edit and who attack things to do with parapsychology are funded by organizations like the James Randi Educational Foundation and the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry. These endorse and fund their activities, and I suspect that some of these people are actually paid to do it. Some of them, I think, are fanatics, but some, I think, are paid to do it. And I think it should be investigative inquiry into this, a documentary film, I think it would be a very good idea for people making such film to visit some of these skeptic conventions. There's a website about skeptics, which does a great job in exposing their activities. And that website has had undercover agents at skeptical conventions who've written reports of them. Well worth reading on skepticalaboutskeptics.org. And so the people are part of a wider movement, and they used to work mainly through magazines like The Skeptical Inquirer and Michael Shermer's magazine, The Skeptic. They found that working through Wikipedia is much more effective. It has much more a greater reach, and is able to distort opinion in their favor over the whole world. So they've just found a great platform, but they're coming out of that's been going on for years, which is based on denial of the paranormal, denial of the spiritual, denial of the scientific, denial of any form of health care. So they have an ideological agenda. I think many of them are true believers in it. And I think that many of them see themselves as fighting a good fight against the forces of superstition, nonsense, and so forth, people like you and me. Their self-image is dedicated servants of the truth. People find the truth. It's just they have an incredibly narrow vision, a kind of tunnel vision. They don't really want to know legitimate studies and papers and peer-reviewed journals because they think they know the truth already. They're fundamentalist, basically.
When you take a look at how it's impacted your life, could you give us some of the ways that has limited your ability to either get funding for your research or get published or do lectures, your income? How has it impacted you?
Well, it has quite a negative impact because as soon as anyone in any mainstream gets interested in my work, in a mainstream university want to invite someone on the committee or in the editorial office says, okay, let's look this guy up. So they look me up on Wikipedia, and there it says I'm a pseudoscientist and tries to portray me as somebody who's completely on a lunatic fringe, not taken seriously by anyone in the scientific world. And then that just means I don't get the invitations or sometimes get disinvited. In a way, I feel slightly grateful for it because I already get far many invitations for interviews, Zoom calls, giving courses, going to conferences than I can deal with. And I, if it wasn't for Wikipedia, I'd probably get more. So in a way, I'm grateful to them for stopping me being totally overloaded and overwhelmed. But there's no doubt that they design it to have a negative effect, and it does have a negative effect, particularly anything to do with the mainstream media. So I'm never featured on television, radio, or in regular sort of mainstream radio shows, magazines, newspapers, because people there are frightened of I'm too dangerous to know. They're aware that this will be very controversial, they'll get attacked, at least they're afraid they'll get attacked for giving me a platform. So they play safe and they don't. So it was designed to have that effect, this Wikipedia campaign, and that's the effect it does actually have. So these so-called skeptics are succeeding.
Okay, I'm cutting this a little short, about 3 minutes short, because it's getting a little difficult to understand. We've tried several different Skype connections with him, but unfortunately they're not going through. We will try working on this and post the whole interview later today, so you'll be able to hear the last 3 minutes of that. But what he is saying is simple. He has published dozens and dozens of articles, yet they scrub that. He has a PhD with honors from Oxford University or Cambridge University. They scrub that. They simply eliminate it like it didn't exist. Now, you don't do that unintentionally. So I challenge Wikipedia. I challenge its editors. I challenge Jimmy Wells. I challenge the law firm that we're going to expose also that has defended them on the following basis. There is a triple negative. First, a person who does not want to be on Wikipedia is put on there, and they are pillared. They are denigrated. Then when they go to correct it through Wikipedia's own system, any imbalances or biases, they're rejected. If they insist, they're banned. Other people will go there to try to correct them. They're also challenged, and there's a whole attack system. For example, on my Wikipedia page, there are 67 editors protecting the page, meaning they put a whole army of editors to make sure nothing gets changed. They do the same thing with Deepak Chopra, etc. Then the editor, with no background, no expertise, nothing, becomes the judge, jury, and executioner of your character. This is the only place in American jurisprudence where this is allowed, where you knowingly work with a group, a cabal, in secret, and you decide who you're going to target, and then you destroy them with the full compliance and knowledge of Jimmy Wales. I hold him personally responsible, and one day he will be held accountable in the court of public opinion, or hopefully in a larger court, because there's an awful lot of people we've spoken to, hundreds of thousands of representatives within fields that are willing to go forward with massive class action lawsuits. The only thing preventing that is they were protected by the Decency Act. Now there is both left and right consensus that that has been abused by Google, Facebook, and others. So there's going to be a change in that. We are already submitting all of our articles, all of our information to them. That's why we need you to let your legislator know to hold Wikipedia, along with the other internet providers, hold them accountable when they break the law and libel someone or destroy someone's character. And mind you, there's no opportunity for change. We can prove that. We have dozens of lawyers we've been speaking with who represent other clients. One guy spent tens of thousands of dollars. Nothing could be changed. But they thought they could hide forever because they were anonymous. We've broken that, and we now know who these people are. So then when you do have the evidence of something you've done that's good, they don't allow any of that on. That's by intent. That's malice aforethought. That's where you get your big damages. Your damages come when you can prove malice, and we can, and we're confident that will happen. And we're going with one of the most respected, high-powered libel firms in Great Britain, and we're going after a lot of people. And I'll announce the lawsuits the day they're served, but we're being very methodical. And I'm going to post our lawsuit on PRN.fm, and it has over 1,000, get this, in fact, one of the lawyers says, I've never seen any court case that has over 1,000 references, what would be called exhibits. We have them. So here's what we're doing. And it's unfortunate I had to do this, but it's part of what our effort is to show what they've chosen to exclude. For example, I've mastered 15 different fields, not one, 15. And so the accomplishments at the highest end of social acceptance or professional acceptance in each field is acknowledged. For example, Lifetime Achievement Award, the only person in the history of Pacifica Radio in over 65 years to receive that. And that's given. You would never know that. The broke every record in history of PBS and all non-commercial radio, best-selling author, over 70 best-selling books. And in radio, one of the longest daily, the single longest daily uninterrupted radio program in American history, 53 years. So all the achievements, the most awards of any independent documentarian in the world thus far this year, over 27. We haven't mentioned you because to me it's just another win and we go forward. These are very prestigious ones too. In fact, I can't do it. I don't have the time. I got to send someone to India. It's a big to-do over there, and sometime, I think it's in September. And in fact, I tell the audience, if any of you live in this area and want to go pick up an award, it's a big deal. We'll pay your expenses. You can enjoy a night. You'd never know any of that. You'd never know Lifetime Achievement Award from the Margaret Mead Foundation at the UN General Assembly. There I am. You'd never know that. So if you go to prn.fm and look under video bios, see all the stuff that I have achieved, none of which is shown on Wikipedia. By intent, it's excluded. And then what you do read on Wikipedia are lies, pure out-and-out lies. So we're leading the way to show a different way of approaching Wikipedia, because the old way, you'd have to be a naive idiot to believe that you can go up there and edit and correct anything. You can't. The game is fixed, and we have full documentation because we've captured all their inside arguments. It's too late. You can't erase it. We have it. We got you. Now let's see what happens when we go to court. So go up on prn.fm and take a look for yourself. See the evidence that they don't want you to know. Now, the same thing with Rupert Sheldrake. You wouldn't know that he was one of the most honored graduates from Cambridge University. You wouldn't know that, because they scrubbed the fact that he even had graduated. But he has the evidence. Now everyone, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who we've spoken with, they're all following our lead. So we're the canary in the coal mine. We're going out there, and all it takes is to take out one brick from this artificial edifice of Wikipedia, and the entire house collapses as one giant fraud, in my opinion. More on that coming up. Now, tomorrow, I'm going to go through 12 experts. I'm talking about the best in the field challenging what we know about the coronavirus, this artificial panic. And we're going to deconstruct this tomorrow. I have Dr. Bacotti, a specialist in microbiology, professor at Johannes Gutenberg University in Mainz, and head of the Institute for Medical Microbiology and Hygiene. He's one of the most cited research scientists in German history. He's just but one, and that's the caliber of people that we're going to deconstruct Anthony Fauci and the rest of these dancing clowns and idiots' work, and how we have been lied to and how it's destroyed our lives. That'll be tomorrow. Very quickly, I just want you to know that we got our next shipment of cereal in. We were out. I'm sorry, everybody wanted it. We'd limited everybody to one bag. Now we've got plenty, at least for the next 3 months, and we're limiting it to five bags. Now, each bag contains 12 servings, and a normal serving, let's say, would be, what, $5-6 for just some oatmeal in a restaurant, diner? We're only charging what amounts to about $1.56 per serving. Now, what are you going to get in that serving? You're going to get the steel-cut oatmeal, oat fiber, coconut oil, brown rice protein, flaxseed powder, almond protein, bananas, blueberries, pomegranates, watermelon, cherries, strawberries, raspberries, grapes and grape seed extract, papaya and prunes and apples, acerola, goji berry, cranberries, acai berry, bilberry, plus parsley, carrots, cabbage, spinach, kale, barley grass, asparagus, spirulina, celery, onion, cauliflower, broccoli, and radish, and you won't taste any of those vegetables. It has a wonderful, a vanilla banana quality to it. So you're getting good quality protein, and it's a super breakfast, and it's easy to use. And it's a 1.5-pound bag. And so each bite of this superfood breakfast packs a powerful punch with the fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds. No one's ever done this before that we're aware of. I created this. It took me a year to get the ingredients. And because of the shortages of supplies, it took me 4 months to get it back in stock because of shortages. But we finally were patient. We looked for other countries, other sources, and we got everything. So it's here. And there's no better breakfast you could have. So I'm going to give you a number to call, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 to get your superfood breakfast. And you can get up to five bags. So that would give you a 2-month supply, even more. All right, and it's very inexpensive. You're saving a huge amount of money if you were to go buy your oatmeal yourself, and you just get oatmeal. You wanted some blueberries to go with it, you got to pay $4 for those extra blueberries. Here you're getting the blueberries, you're getting everything in there. All right? So that's that. Also, some of the people kind of confuse the idea of being an intern and going down and staying for a month or two and learning and working about hydroponics, that they're going to come and ask me a lot of questions about their health. That's what we were inundated with yesterday. No, I'm not even there. I'm in Florida. This is in Texas. I just thought some people might like to see what it's like and how to do it so they could go home and do it themselves. But it's not because you're going to come and just ask me questions. A, I'm not there. And B, we want people who can actually work and learn. So if that interests you, I'm still going to leave it open with the hope I'll get some people who want to learn. I can only have one or two people, that's it, because the staff there don't have the patience for people who, you know, are not interested in learning. There's a whole team working on it down there together on an intentional project. Call 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. Now, let's go to a self-empowerment lecture. I think you're going to find it, and this is just a small part of it. This is an abbreviated part, but I think you'll enjoy it. Okay, this is called How to Overcome Our Dysfunction. Why do we succeed at some things and fail at others if we give both the same amount of intention and intensity of effort? It all begins by realizing that when we begin a journey, any journey in life or any transition from one part of life to another, we first have to decide what we're going to surrender. That means we have to take a moment and reflect. And this is something we have a hard time doing because we are hyperkinetic. We're distracted constantly, every waking moment. If we're not distracted, we seek distractions. We seek something to take us away from being present with ourselves. We'll want a phone call, or we'll go eat something, even if we're not hungry. We'll watch something on television, or we'll spend time on the computer. And then at the end of all this, what have we actually achieved? Well, we've created imbalance. Now, in a previous discussion, I talked about one of the keys of being healthy is being happy. In fact, in my counseling of tens of thousands of people, I've never seen someone who could be healthy until they were happy. Hence, happiness is the foundation upon which we should start our journey. Am I happy? And if not, why not? And that's where we have to say, what must I surrender now in order to gain something that is essential to me, more essential than what I thought? So if I had taken on a lot of beliefs that I now want to look at and say, was it really worth all that effort and time to work on A when I should have been working on B? Should I have gone to that university? Should I have taken those courses? Should I have gotten married that young or that late? Had this many children or no children? What if I choose to be alone? Am I lonely? Am I self-pitying? Am I depressed? And if so, by what measure? Why? What do I gain from my dysfunction? No one ever asked that. What do I gain from my anger? What do I gain from my judgmentalism of others? What do I gain from anything that would be perceived by normal and reasonable people as counterintuitive and counterproductive? Because anything that you give power to suddenly has power over everything else that's going on in your mind. And that's why we have so many people who are selectively functional. What do I mean? I mean that when it's required for our own survival to make intelligent or what seems like reasonable and intelligent and committed and disciplined decisions, we are good at it. Hence, we can do a job very well, and almost everyone does. Most people would do whatever they are mastering with some level of efficiency and quality. That doesn't mean that that is also with purpose. More often than not, the real purpose is because that job we need, it pays our bills, it gives us some sense of of commitment to overcoming the deficiencies and not having a place to live, food to eat, clothes to wear, money to socialize, go to school, anything we want. Money provides us and income provides us with that stability. But in the process of not asking, should I surrender the long journey, the longer commitment, the longer discipline, the longer introspection, the longer meditation about where I'm at, if this section of my life, this crossroads of my life, for the short get, where I'll get someplace now, but is it the right job? Is it the right relationship? Is it the right food you're eating? Are you in the right place? Are you thinking the right thoughts? Are you reading the right books? How are you using your time? Are you a happy person or unhappy? Are you committed to understanding what causes happiness and what causes a lack of contentment with life? These are serious issues. These are deeper issues. And we have a real hard time swimming in the deeper waters of life. We've gotten so used to superficiality that even our philosophers today are not taking it deep enough. We have these people that we think are brilliant, and they're more often than not some form of self-centered, narcissistic, self-empowerment gurus. They're not there to really help people, I don't believe. I believe if people got better, that's good, but they're there for themselves. And so what we have is we generally have people who have multiple problems, all simultaneously, but we parse our problems and try to categorize them, like we do so many of the things in life. We're not just one whole Gaia. We're not a part of all life with our life energy and flowing. We have compartmentalized, cut and diced and sliced until we are this, this, this. We're this religion. We're Catholic or Jew or Muslim or an atheist, agnostic, a spiritualist, or we are a vegan or a vegetarian, or we're on a particular diet, partially educated, highly educated. We're at some point in a career and trying to get further in that career. Why? Why does anyone have to keep going up this ladder that doesn't exist? Because we're told there's a reward at the top of the ladder. You've been practicing medicine, dentistry, law, a professor for 20 years. Where are you in this spectrum? Where are you? Did you stop and ask yourself, should I surrender this need to have an artificial standard of living that replaces the sense of who I actually am, because I really don't know who I am? I don't know the value of my being. I only know the cost of maintaining some superficiality of self. We don't ask these questions. They're too deep. And they require us to actually stop everything, stop and go to neutral and say, my God, my life's a mess. But who knows your life's a mess? Most people, you'd never know there's a mess, because on the outside, they've mastered functional reality. They function in the real world in ways that are acceptable, and they can have them plausible deniability. I'm okay. How you doing? I'm okay. Are you now going to say, because I was traumatized 30 years ago, it justifies me, you know, snorting cocaine? No. That's how superficial and such lack of depth in our thinking has become. Because it will not help a person just to bring them something that is self-evidently good for the body if what's up here in the perception of their reality says, I'm insecure, I don't know who I really am, I don't have a lot of confidence, I have uncertainty about a lot of things, so the moment a crisis occurs, I'm going to go right back to the way I was before I was here. I know that because I've seen how frequently people will revert back off a healthy program to a sick program. And so why would you intentionally see that you got so much healthier and better and then give it up and go back to being sick? Because there's something people get from their choices. So we have to ask ourselves, is life a series of compromises? And if so, what is the cost or benefit of each compromise? So when you can ask and answer that question, you begin to ask yourself, am I engaged in any addictive behavior? Because science and medicine and social sciences like us believe that all addictions are biochemical imbalances, a disease that can be easily categorized, and therefore, oh, you've got this disease, you've got this
illness, we have to give you this medication, this protocol. It's all paid for because it's all been put in the great register of healing modality. Nobody's ever been healed from anything within psychiatry using their pharmacological panaceas. No, the Valium, Prozac, Paxil, electroconvulsive therapy, lobotomy. So then they become the holders of truth. It's understood that you defer always to the sanctity of truth to those in a higher position. So what if in starting our new journey, we just decide, I'm willing to sacrifice believing in everything and then reform my beliefs based upon actual, in the moment, understanding. That would be a very unusual way of looking at life. We do not appreciate that when we make a choice, we frequently have not surrendered its opposite choice. And hence we can flow from good decisions to bad decisions, smart decisions to stupid decisions. We can flow between constructive to destructive in that quick. And that confuses us because we like to think that's a good person. You mean they're good all the time, some of the time, a little bit of the time? Or that person's a bad person. Are they bad all the time, sometime? So ask yourself, in all of the compromises you make, what do you gain from making a bad choice? So when someone robs a bank, it's a bad choice when they get caught, but it's a good choice for them if they're not. When a person's committing adultery, it's a good choice when they're not caught. It's a bad choice when they're caught. When someone's lying, good when they don't get caught, bad when they get caught. Greed, because once you start aligning yourself with compromising integrity, ethics, and honor for comforts, you've taken the short choice, not looking at the long-term consequence, because there's a short-term and a long-term consequence to every choice you make. Lie today, get away with it. Tomorrow, you may be held accountable for it. Can we not be mature enough to accept that if you keep screwing up, you're the cause of your problem? So don't look over there or out there. Don't triangulate other people as your problem. You're the problem. You're the solution. There's a consequence to not accepting responsibility. And it doesn't mean because you accept responsibility, you have to beat up on yourself. It's not about self-flagellation. It's not about creating a low sense of self-esteem. It's not martyring yourself. It's just being honest. You made bad choices. Because none of those people became alcoholics or an alcoholic at the beginning. It's something they adapted that lifestyle into their life.
Hopefully you enjoy that. These are just ways of getting people to stimulate a different type of thought. And we'll continue to share these with you. By the way, there's over 38 of them, including full-length ones. Go to prn.fm and then scroll down to self-empowerment videos, and you'll see any of them you want. Okay? Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.